Gay Mormon Stories is a production of Mormon Stories and the Open Stories Foundation. To support this podcast, please donate today at gaymormonstories.org. All donations go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer Mormons. And thanks for listening.
Hi, this is Dana Parkinson with Gay Mormon Stories. I'm back with this week's episode with Sam Noble. Sam Noble is living in Indiana, and he has been involved in Affirmation and Randall Thacker and John Gustav Rathwell, who both know him, both strongly recommended that I interview him because of his very interesting and inspirational story. And I've had some chance to hear him talk in interviews and also some things he's written. So I'm excited to introduce Sam Noble. Sam, do you want to say hello? And
hey,
a very, very, very brief bio about yourself, but not getting into too much.
Sure. Like you said, I live in Muncie, Indiana right now. I was born in Logan, Utah originally. Was here in Indiana by the time I started kindergarten. Grew up here. Went to BYU. Served a mission in Taiwan. Back at BYU. Started to come out after my mission the next few years. And
okay. Well, I'm going to ask you a lot of questions about that, but what do you do for a living?
Right now, I don't. I'm in between.
You're in between jobs?
Job. Well, I have a job. I serve at a restaurant, but I'm in between life
career
paths.
Career forwarding jobs.
Yes. Okay. Yes, yes, yes.
But you never know
what
serving in a restaurant could lead to.
That's true.
Lots of good things are coming. Not to everybody, though. Okay.
Keep my fingers crossed.
Well, then I'll ask you more about that too then. But let's just start then with maybe a standard start in this kind of interview is, what's your Mormon heritage?
I go back to pioneer heritage on both sides. They crossed the plains, and I think most of my family is converts from England. And other European, mostly England. That's where I come from, I guess.
Uh-huh. Me too.
Uh-huh.
And so, were you born into a large family?
I'm the oldest. I've got a younger brother and two younger sisters.
Uh-huh.
My parents, very active, church members. My dad comes from a stricter family than my mom did. My mom's mother, my grandma, is she's very open-minded, very much a Democrat. My dad's family, more Republican.
Okay.
And so I had a good balance growing up. Between different views, even though they were both within the church, I had good balance there, I think.
Yeah. And both your parents were from Utah?
My dad grew up actually mostly later on in Colorado. So he's from Denver area. My mom, she actually grew up in Terre Haute, Indiana. So neither of them really spent their whole life in Utah, but they both went there for school. That's where they met and had me.
So they were still in grad school or something when you were born?
Yes, up in Logan at Utah State.
Okay. So tell me then about your upbringing. It sounds like you spent most of your childhood in Indiana, most of your years that would be more distinguishable anyway. Was that anything outside of a normal Mormon childhood?
No, I was very, I don't know, at least at that time, I'm very kind of Peter Priestody, very devout, very much.
You mean this was your, this is how you related to the church from early on? You
were
you were very Mormon.
Yes, I was very Mormon. I loved
from a very young age.
Yeah, I don't think I really felt a personal faith testimony until I started seminary. When I was 14, I definitely noticed a change. I mean, I started to be interested in it myself. There was a little bit before then. There were times I didn't want to go to church, and I'd fight with my dad about that. But once I started high school and seminary, something just kind of clicked inside me, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed going to church. I enjoyed reading scriptures and preparing for a mission.
Your childhood was otherwise normal, though. You attended primary, you identified as Mormon, you were living near your maternal grandparents, I'm guessing.
Yes, saw them on a pretty regular basis.
Would you say your childhood was normal in other ways? Did you have some amount of bullying in elementary school? Would you say that you were different than other kids, or more just perfectly normal or typical rowdy young boy, or how would you describe your...
I was slightly different, I think. There was one kid who kind of bullied me from elementary school up through high school, but I wasn't really the target on a regular basis of bullying or teasing. I don't know if you want me to talk about it now, but as far as like when I became aware of my feelings, I avoided that. And so...
Why? Was there some awareness coming as a child?
Yeah, I know for certain third grade, I remember asking a friend, we made a list of the girls in our grade we thought were the best looking. And then after we did that, I wanted to make a list of the guys in our third grade class that we thought were best looking. And he didn't think that was a strat. I mean, he went along with it. He's, as far as I know, not not gay himself, but by that time I was definitely noticing guys, not so much in a sexual way, but just attraction, just as much or more so than I was attracted to girls. But up through elementary school, I mean, I had crushes on girls. I wanted to have a girlfriend. To fit in socially, that was part of what I wanted. And I really cared a lot about fitting in, definitely at least through middle school.
Okay. And so how was puberty for you then? When you started to be a deacon, this is a rough time for most everybody. It's also the time where we have our sexuality starting to emerge, our consciousness of it, our obsession with it, basically, is normal. Was this a hard time for you, like it is for most young men, not just gay, but all of us?
Well, I think a couple things made it easier for me than it would have been. Socially, like I said, I really wanted to fit in, and there was a group of young men at church who really welcomed me and became good friends as I entered the young men's program, deacon, teacher, priest stage. They made it easier with church, so that was another reason I enjoyed going. As far as, like, sexually reaching puberty, I, very early on, I mean, pornography, I'd watch that, look at it sometimes. As far as masturbation goes, my dad actually made that easier for me because we had a very strict, my bishop growing up was very strict as far as masturbation went, and
you mean he was talking about it frequently or asking about it frequently?
Well, he would ask about it in interviews before you could. For example, I had to wait, I think, several months to be ordained a teacher after I had turned 14. And at the time, it was very embarrassing, just socially. My mom didn't know what was going on. She came into my room one time and asked if I smoked, and didn't know what was keeping me from becoming ordained a teacher. And it was my bishop that was very strict. You can't do that if you want to advance to the priesthood. My dad, while he was the stricter of my parents in most cases, he was very relaxed as far as this goes, and to a certain extent kind of fought back against the bishop. Even when the bishop was telling me how it was wrong and I needed to stop doing it, my dad was taking me aside and like, well, it's really not that big of a deal, and you don't need to worry too much about it. I mean, don't make it a habit. But he kind of, that was the first time, one of the first times, I saw that what was coming from a church leader wasn't necessarily the way it is. And so I saw a bit of gray instead of just black and white.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic that your dad sort of was a little more progressive about this.
Yes.
Back before the church was. I mean, I guess it was, this isn't that long ago. I'm dating myself here, but back in my day, it was like, it was a huge, you know, talked about in every week in priesthood meeting, you know, it was an obsession, it seemed like, with the leaders. But you're saying that your bishop was coming from that place. He was really harping on that, but your father was taking a more normalizing stance on it. And so that kind of helped you kind of put it in perspective, but you still had to sort of deal with the shame and the trauma of being delayed in your advancement with your ordinations.
Yeah, that was tough.
Were you also talking to your bishop about the pornography then?
I would bring it up, but I think it never, yeah, it was definitely brought up, but it never became a big issue.
So he focused on the masturbation, but not necessarily on the porn.
Yeah, and I could go for long enough without watching porn that it didn't ever become the central to the conversation.
Okay. Do you think the other boys in your ward were just not telling him, or do you think they were also getting the same sort of...
I think both. We had a large youth group growing up here, and I know there were some who, I mean, for periods of time, couldn't pass a sacrament, couldn't bless a sacrament, and I'm probably for... some of them for similar reasons, the same reason. And
so there was sort of this public sort of awareness of that there was this sort of discipline going on.
Yeah, yeah.
In your ward. That's interesting because mine never, nobody was ever, you know, you had to like absolutely have engaged in fornication or something to actually not be passing the sacrament, right?
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure if anyone confessed. That's what I'm not sure about.
Uh-huh.
I'm just assuming someone must have, but I never heard of someone actually being... So it's interesting that this in your ward, in a way that would help remove the stigma from sort of being sanctioned just to kind of see that different friends of yours, I mean, how did that impact you? Or was it just seem like more of a shaming thing in your eyes?
More of a shaming thing. I mean, that honestly, no one gave me a hard time about it. No one judged me. I didn't feel judgment from other people at church. I mean, honestly, the most difficult thing, a couple times I wasn't able to go to the temple with the youth on a temple trip. That was tough and awkward, but no one ever made a big deal about it. And like I said, it wasn't something at that age I had any desire to bring up with my mom.
But meanwhile, you were talking with your father about it.
Yeah, yeah. And that was tough to finally talk with him about it. Because masturbation is something I kind of just discovered before I had ever been told about it or taught about it. And so by the time I was taught it was wrong, it was already a regular thing for me.
Yeah. You and lots of young men. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but you decided to tell your father because you just felt like you had to explain why you were not able to advance in the priesthood, or... was it that you were turning to him for help, or which?
Well, I told him because the bishop made me tell him. Said, either you tell him or I will, pretty much, kind of thing. And I think I put it off for as long as I could, but I finally sat down and told him. And it was a big relief. I mean, that's one thing in my family, we never talked about sex. My dad was very by the book. He has a science background. And he sat down and, like, would have a birds and the bees sex talk with us. Just very frank about things, very anatomically correct about things.
Okay.
But then after that, pragmatic. But we would never discuss it. If there was any sexuality in TV, movies, that was always just a horrible thing, and he didn't want that in our house. We wouldn't have any discussion about that. And so that was, it was very taboo. I mean, sex, law of chastity was just something very taboo in my family that we never really discussed and talked openly about. And so it was very nerve-wracking for me to bring it up with him. But once I had, I mean, he was very cool about it. Yeah. And it was a relief.
Yeah, that must have been. What about the overall message you were getting about masturbation? You know, I'm trying to put it in the context of your generation. I mean, in my generation, it was like right there by murder, you know. So were you sort of getting this other, you know, not just your bishop, but were you getting it from other leaders or from general conferences or anything that sort of made you otherwise preoccupied with masturbation or porn?
I think I definitely, as far as porn goes, I heard that a lot, especially in general conference. I just, growing up, in my mind, I think of priesthood session or general conference and always there being President Hinckley or someone else talking about the evils of pornography. And so I always felt very ashamed and dirty after I'd look at porn. As far as masturbation goes, I don't know if, aside from that bishop, not too much. There's the For Young Men Only pamphlet. I think it's President Packer's talk about the factory and not messing with it. And that, I mean, I had that growing up, but I mean, my dad really, I think, saved me from feeling too awful about that. On one side, my bishop was saying, don't do it, none at all. My dad was basically like, you know, try your best, don't make it a habit, and...
But don't obsess about it.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, or don't consider it like you just, you know, got addicted to heroin or something.
Right.
Okay, well, but what about the porn? What are you looking at? I mean, when you, you know, like every teenager, you obviously discovered porn. It was, you know, widely available on the internet. Did you, was it gay porn you were looking at?
Yes.
And so did this kind of coincide with an awareness that maybe there was a reason you were looking at, you know, those kind of pictures?
Yes and no. I knew there was something different. I mean, the fact that I wanted to look at that when my friends only wanted to look at the girls. And I found the girls disgusting. And I think part of that is because growing up, I just thought of women as very holy, very spiritual, sacred, and put them up on a pedestal. And to see them in porn was just taking something beautiful and like throwing it in the mud and just desecrating a woman. And so I obviously, okay, I'm physically just not attracted to them, right. But also...
You only have the negativity to go with it and none of sort of the positive things that other, that your peers were getting out of the experience.
Right,
not
right.
Positive, but whatever, the positive reinforcement certainly of being sexually turned on by it, right?
Uh-huh.
So, of course, you would just keep those other thoughts intact, right? The other opinions about it.
Yes, yes. And I didn't think too much of it. It wasn't until well after my mission that I ever considered using the word gay for myself, describing myself as gay or homosexual. I knew there was this part of me that liked that and was attracted to guys. And as I went through puberty, I mean, my attractions became more sexual and would just think of that aspect of it. But I still envisioned myself with marrying a woman in the temple. And that was... just my, that was my future. And so this part of me, whatever it was, wasn't going to stick with me. It wasn't something I would ever really act on. It wasn't anything that I wanted in my life.
And it didn't come up in an ecclesiastical interview, what kind of porn you might have looked at.
Yeah. Yeah. I brought it up once that I have these feelings with my bishop growing up. And he sat there for a minute, thought about it, and then, I mean, more or less, he didn't dig anymore. He didn't ask anymore. I never brought it up again, and that was that.
Okay.
So he never asked about the type of porn, never asked about... I mean, I wasn't intentionally lying, but I was definitely You could say I was misleading him into thinking that it was just all straight porn and just normal, but...
being intentionally vague.
Yes, yes, yes.
So not exactly dishonest, but you weren't giving him the whole entire story, but he was also not asking.
Correct.
Okay. So what about your, you know, those early adolescent years? You said you started to develop feelings that you were aware were sexual feelings towards some of your peers. How was this impacting your school and church experience? Were you finding yourself distracted by this, or was it complicating your friendships, or was it just something that was there in the background? Or
It was more in the background. I never had a huge crush on a friend or anyone else. I would find guys attractive, but never really act on it, didn't ever bring it up with them, didn't think too much about it myself. I would fantasize about it, but never really acted.
Okay, so, but overall, how was your adolescence otherwise at school and at church? You know, did bullying start up at all, or did you manage to sort of get through without that being part of your experience? Would you say that you liked school?
I really did. I look back now, and middle school, I think I struggled. I don't know. I cared way too much what people think. I think it's pretty normal, but I don't have that fond of memories of middle school. But high school, I had a great time. Bullying, like I said, there was that one kid who kind of followed me just in the shadows through elementary, middle, and high school. But after freshman year, I hardly ever saw him. I was quite involved in swimming, newspaper, student council. I was very busy with school stuff. Most of my friends I'd actually hang out with were from church. Had some very close friends I met at youth conference in EFY, and I actually met a girl who I became very close with during high school. She was in my stake, and she was very much my plan / hope of getting married and having a happy Mormon family church life.
Uh-huh. So you were already kind of putting hopes on her, even though you were still a teenager.
Yeah, I didn't let myself think too much, but it was in the back of my mind. Yeah.
Okay. But it sounds like the church experience was where you were getting a lot of your positive. Well, you were getting it both at school and church because you were highly involved in the extracurricular activities, but you were also highly involved in church and the church youth programs, and it sounds like a lot of your friends were from church. Were there very many church friends at school, or were you like the only Mormon in your high school?
There were a few of us, I think 5 or 6 in the high school of about 1,300. So not many, but I had a good adolescence, socially, very happy, very involved. I didn't have too many, like I said, I did not spend time outside of school with people from school. And I was a good Mormon boy, not doing anything with anybody who would be drinking, who would doing anything questionable, just staying away from all of that. And that did keep me away from that myself, but it also kept me away now that I look back, from developing friendships and relationships with a lot of wonderful people. So... a good part of me regrets that, but on the other hand, I spent a lot of great time with great church friends.
Yeah. And so meanwhile, was there anyone in your school who was gay? Did you kind of understand that there was a such thing as a gay person? Did you have a conceptualization of that possible identity?
I did. There's one guy who, he caught me off guard. He was a couple years younger than me, and I think when I was a senior in high school, he basically asked me for my number and called my house a couple times, just kind of freaked me out. And I just didn't really want anything to do with that, because, I mean, a good part of me, I realized that I like guys, but I didn't want anyone else to figure that out.
Yeah.
And I wasn't ready to befriend anyone who was gay. I don't know in my mind what my perception of that was. There were a couple guys who were quite flamboyant, but no one that I knew who was really out, and everyone was aware of it, and they were cool with it. That didn't happen until a few years after I graduated at my high school.
Okay. But meanwhile, so in high school, that's when you got really super connected to your Mormonism, and that's also where you developed sort of more of a spiritual connection and an identity as being a Mormon. You talked about starting to have that experience in seminary. Were you also serving in leadership roles in your youth programs and at seminary and stuff?
I was. I was in Deacon's Quorum President, Teacher's Quorum President, Priest Quorum Assistant. So leadership at church, I started to go to, I think I went to EFY when I was 16, 17, 18. Loved that, just ate that up. I loved being the Mormon at school. I loved being different and just kind of standing out. That was a cool feeling to me, that kind of a pattern that's continued in different phases of my life with different roles.
So you finished high school. Did we leave anything out before we go to your college years? Dating girls. I didn't ask you much about that. You said you kind of had that one girlfriend you had hopes for. Was there kind of more dramas or traumas about dating?
Well, with her, it was really interesting. I didn't want to think too much about it. Didn't want to push anything. She was a year older than me. I really looked up to her, thought she was awesome, didn't know why she would want anything to do with me, but she was so nice, very friendly, welcoming. She actually had a boyfriend at school who wasn't a member, but we would still just hang out in groups as like church friends. And so let's see, as far as she goes, we just became closer and closer until I left on my mission, basically, and we can get to that later, but just kind of an unspoken connection there. And as far as actually dating girls, because that was all just hanging out with her, I went on dates often with different girls in my ward, state, but never dated. It was just always, well, the For Strength of Youth book says we should date, but not pair off, and so I'm just going to do what it says and date and wait and put that for after my mission and forget that I'm gay, and that's why it's so easy to do that, but that was my dating life in high school.
Okay. So you were just being a good Mormon kid.
Yep, fulfilling my duty.
Not much drive to do otherwise.
No.
Okay, so where did you go to college then? Where did you decide to go to university?
I went to BYU in Provo.
Okay. So you went there before your mission?
Yes. I had a really fun freshman year there and didn't do as much studying as I should have, but I had a great experience there. Again, it was just kind of a continuation of high school with everything. I mean, with friends, with dating, with just like pushing any feeling I had for guys in the back of my mind, porn and masturbation continued, but not out of control, nothing that kept me from going on a mission after that year. And I'm trying to think if anything else happened of significance that freshman year.
Did you like BYU?
I did. I really did. I think I liked it more that year than I did until after I graduated. I was a super... I just dove into the cult. Well, I was a huge BYU football fan for that 1 year. And, I mean, I painted my chest and face, and when we had front row tickets and got on ESPN. And then a month later... Who was before Samuelson? Do you remember?
No, Jeff Holland, right?
No, it was after him.
Yeah, I'm pretty behind the times.
Oh, well. Anyway, whoever the president was, a few weeks after we were on ESPN for that, in a devotional, he talked about why we don't paint our bodies and faces.
Oh, really?
So I
shame.
I feel like I'm partly responsible for that, or can take some credit for that. But I love BYU.
Were you living in the dorms?
Yep, I was.
Which ones?
Heliman Halls.
Uh-huh, okay.
I was in May Hall, the last of Heliman to be remodeled or torn down. And so the guys on my floor just destroyed it because we knew it was going to be torn down after that year. And so just like no respect for the building at all. It was trashed by the time we moved out.
Wow. Okay. And so you got ready to go on a mission. You got called from BYU or?
I did. Yeah. I put my papers in at BYU. I got my call within a week or two after getting home for the summer.
Or
to Taiwan, Taichung mission.
Okay. Mandarin?
Yep.
Okay. So you had a summer and then you left in the fall for your mission?
Yes.
Okay. So let's talk about your mission. How was it?
My mission was wonderful. I loved the language, food, people, culture. Loved just having one purpose, sharing the gospel. I grew up loving missionary work and talking about the gospel and loved doing it all the time. It was really just quite easy for me talking to people. Learning Mandarin, I won't say it was difficult or easy. I feel like I progressed at a kind of in the middle normal rate, but I never had trouble opening my mouth and talking to people. On the street in Taiwan, we did a lot of street contacting.
Uh-huh.
But it was a lot of, I don't know, it was, sometimes it just kind of felt like throwing it out there. I don't know, that missionary work is interesting.
When you say throwing it out there, throwing out,
the,
as in street contacting, throwing out the gospel?
Yeah, as in street contacting.
Okay.
And, so yeah, I love my mission. I think the first part of my mission, I didn't really think too much about my homosexuality and feelings for guys. I was very focused. But by the time, about halfway through it, I started to become distracted more and more by just noticing guys and not being able to completely focus my entire heart and mind on my missionary work. And
noticing what, other elders or guys in the community? Or
no, guys in the community, both? Yeah. I mean, people we would pass. You could say I got yellow fever. I mean, I just started to find Asian guys very attractive. And it became distracting to me and frustrating, I guess, because I had come on this mission and been very faithful growing up, thinking that this would just go away. And it definitely wasn't doing that. I finished my mission, came home.
Can I go talk a little more about your mission?
Yeah, definitely.
What about the element of the mission with the male bonding, the intensity of the relationships with the companions and the other district members? How did that work out for you? Did that end up being positive for you, or did it end up sublimating? Did it end up provoking? What would you say about that?
It was positive, if anything. I never had any issues with companions, never as far as this gay themes or being attracted to them. That never became an issue. I feel like in high school, being on the swim team, I mean, I didn't play football, basketball, I wasn't a jock by any means, but I swam and that just got me, I don't know if desensitized is the right word, but just to kind of locker room, being around other guys.
So it wasn't like a new thing for you to hang out in the shower room with guys. I mean, you've been doing that for years and years.
Right, right. And so, I mean, being alone with another guy for 24 hours a day wasn't ever a big deal to me.
Okay. But Would you say that you enjoyed, though, the camaraderie at least?
I did. And
Did you have successful friendships with most of your companions?
some more than others. There are a couple I had struggles with, but never, I don't know, we worked it out. And a couple I absolutely loved being with and could have done a whole 2 years with them. It was just a. The ones I enjoyed most were the times when I felt like we were on an equal level. And it wasn't like there was really one senior companion, one junior companion, but we were just working together. We could bounce ideas off of each other. We were both leading, both following. It was really good balance there.
Yeah. Well, so overall, you had a nice time, and those are still happy memories for you.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay. So you came home, you went back to BYU right away, like immediately.
Yes, I actually wanted to extend my mission, but my mission president would not let me because of the school schedule. And I got home the beginning of August, and school started the end of August. So I would have missed that first semester with nothing to do, basically, if I had extended my mission.
Okay.
So, right back into school.
Yeah. Okay. So let's move on then. Well, tell me how those later years went. You say they weren't as great as your first year, as far as you being rah-rah BYU anyway.
Right. So I returned home very aware. I remember, okay, that girl I talked about, she was now out at BYU also. My freshman year, she was in school here in Indiana, and she was out at BYU now. I saw her once in Indiana the summer before I went back out to school, and I was just weird, return missionary weird, but also realizing all these gay feelings that were supposed to go away hadn't. And I didn't, I was just, I mean, embarrassed about that. A big part of me was just ashamed of that and didn't want anyone to know. And so I put a wall up after I got home from mission and really didn't get, I wasn't completely genuine, completely honest, open with really anybody, her especially. Before my mission, we were kind of best friends. After my mission, we could hardly have a conversation just because I was so ashamed of who I was, and I was so different from how I wanted to be around her. I just was really disappointed. And so a couple months of that, and I started to talk to guys online, and
At gay websites
yeah,
or
like
like gay.com.
I think it was a Yahoo gay RM group. And,
A gay return missionary group.
yes.
Okay, back in the days of Yahoo groups,
Right, right.
what, about 10 years ago? Is that
Yeah, it would have been 2000, 11 years ago.
okay? Yeah, so those were the heyday of Yahoo groups.
Yeah, so I started talking to a guy, who lived in Salt Lake, and he and I, he came, he's actually from Taiwan, but had moved to Utah a few years before that, and he would come down to Provo. We would, it, that couple months, that first semester back at BYU was a mix of like us dating, but we'd also incorporate just hanging out with a group of Taiwanese and return Taiwan missionary friends. And so they all thought we were just friends in the group, but we started dating for a couple of months. And I had really just given up on that girl and just knew it wouldn't happen, knew I would never be enough for her and wouldn't be, yeah, for whatever reason, I had, given up on that hope. But I still, dating this guy was very frustrating, because there was a lot of disconnect in my, within me. I still envisioned my future with the Mormon wife, family. I couldn't, I hadn't let go of that yet, but what I was doing was so different from where I still knew I wanted to go. And so there's a lot of cognitive dissonance there that after a couple months of that, I broke it off with him because I just wasn't happy. I was very depressed over that.
Were you dating then?
I would say we were dating. He was my.
Were both of you active in the church at the time?
I was. I went every Sunday. I don't think he was. He came a couple times with me. He wasn't active up in a ward in Salt Lake or anything, but he wasn't incredibly against the church. He would be a bit cynical a couple times, but I don't know, still had some form of faith, but he was very, very okay with it. Just not too interested himself. But
were you feeling tenuous about being at BYU and also dating a guy?
I was, and that kind of culminated with the first time he and I, he never pressured me. I would spend the night at his place. I had roommates, so he would never spend the night at my place, but he never pressured me into doing anything physical. After a couple months, I decided I wanted to, and we had sex, and I freaked out, basically. I was like, oh my gosh, what did I do? This is not where I want to go. I feel dirty. I'm living a lie. I can't be at BYU. I can't be a good Mormon and be doing this. And I went to my bishop at BYU and told him what had happened. And he was very, honestly, very cool with it. At that point, I was just like, you know what? Whatever happens, I'm ready for it. I mean, if I have to be.
So when you confessed, we thought you might even be kicked out of school.
Yeah, I was very ready to be kicked out of school. I knew I was a returned missionary, priesthood holder, and so I could be excommunicated, but I was ready to do whatever it took to make things right, God and with the church. And
so you were in the repentance process, basically.
Yes, I was.
Uh-huh, okay.
And he felt no need to make it any bigger than it had to be, and I think there was a bishop's court, and I was on unofficial probation, or official, I don't know, some lesser punishment than I had expected, and he said, I don't think there's a need for us to tell the honor code office about this, and so never ended up talking to the BYU Honor Code office about it.
I mean, it's nice to hear that there's bishops like that who really put your well-being ahead of this set of rules, you know, that they were supposed to be following.
Yeah, that was another example. I mean, kind of like I talked about growing up, how my dad telling me differently from my bishop, I kind of saw, okay, there's a gray area. There's not just black and white. And this is another example of it. Like, okay, here's BYU on one hand that says this, but my bishop is telling me something completely different. There's not just right and wrong. There's gray.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, your bishop was doing the best thing possible to keep you in the church, because really by excommunicating you, it was really not going to help keep you as a member of the church. So
he definitely did.
He was having an empathetic look at you, but also looking at what was best for keeping your connection. And I think that's why a lot of bishops are now reluctant to have church disciplines, and why there's a trend, you know, to avoid excommunications, not just towards gay people, but towards anybody.
Definitely.
Or I'm hoping there's a trend. I'm not sure what the stats are, or if anyone keeps them. But
thinking about that semester after that court, and after I left that guy, I felt very alone as far as socially. I was living with my best friend from freshman year, but he was getting married. He was dating a girl, getting married that spring, and I didn't see him too often. I had awesome roommates who were very friendly, very just nice to me, very inclusive of me, but I wasn't out to anyone, and that wall that I talked about was still up with anyone. I didn't feel like they really knew who I was, and I didn't necessarily want them to know who I was, but I felt, I mean, at church, the bishopric, always very welcoming, loving, and happy to see me.
But really, the only people you ever talked about being gay was your bishop and also the gay guys that you had chatted with on the Yahoo group.
Yes. No one else at this point.
Okay. So at this point, had you really come to terms that you were gay, or is that still sort of the label you were giving yourself?
No, at this point, so I had been home about a year, and I still wasn't comfortable with the term gay. It just wasn't something I associated with. Too much negative connotation still in my mind. And I went on a study abroad back to Asia that next summer, and stayed after the study abroad to do an internship in Shanghai, China for 2 months. And while I was there, I loved it. I'd meet guys. Because of my experience with that first guy back in Utah, I knew I wasn't ready to date, have a boyfriend, be committed to somebody. And so I just dated, hooked up, promiscuous, just had fun. And I became...
This was after, by then you'd finished BYU.
No.
You were at a study abroad.
Yeah, okay. This was after the study abroad. I was just doing that internship. Not connected to school at all in Shanghai, okay. China. And so for the couple of months I was there, that was kind of the life I led. Definitely didn't keep the law of chastity, but everything else I still did to a T. I mean, I went to church every Sunday, completely obeyed every part of the word of wisdom, would still liked having missionary opportunities, not so many you can have in China, but I was still very much Mormon and still saw myself with a wife and kids, I thought at that point. That was starting to maybe fade a little, but I still wasn't ready to let go of it.
Were you having a lot of cognitive dissonance about that? I mean, was this causing super guilt, being sexually active and in the context of being a Mormon at that time?
It did, and enough so that I actually went to talk to my district president in Shanghai there. And he was very good for me also. That first bishop I told, very good for me, keeping me in the church. And this one was the same. He held I don't know if it was a district court. There aren't any stakes there, but I met with I think it was a district presidency, or maybe it was just whoever was available. I had another church court, I can say that. And I was disfellowshipped at that point. And that church court, my experience, that was, I guess I've had three with that. First one, this one, and then one I'll get to later. And they've all been beautiful experiences to me. I know people have very negative experiences with church disciplines and church courts, but this was a very spiritually rewarding experience for me. Even though I was just disfellowshipped, I felt grounded afterwards instead of like I was treading water, trying to make sense of it all and keep my head above in the church scene as well as doing all this other stuff on the side. Now I was able to kind of take a step back and not worry about... I just didn't feel the church side so heavily weighing on me. And on the other hand, it was a bit stressful because I couldn't go back to BYU until that was resolved. And so I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do with my life.
Okay, so you realized At this point, you had finished 3 years of BYU, or?
2 years.
2 years, but this being disfellowship made you ineligible to return.
Yes.
Until you were reinstated.
Correct. Correct. Okay. And the other thing I want to mention from that church court, I had assignments from that district president, a lot of kind of writing, pondering and writing my feelings and thoughts to different answers to different questions. And during that process, the next several months, I'd say my testimony definitely evolved and my views changed on things. Instead of my relationship with God going directly through the church with everything, I developed what I feel a very personal, direct relationship with God that really had nothing to do with the church at all. And
with the small exception that it was actually a benefit of assignments that you got as part of your disfellowship. So
exactly. So
it sounds like it did you a service, kind of.
Yeah,
happily, because like you say, a lot of people have such negative experience with their church disciplines. But
yeah,
it sounds like either you or just between you and a really excellent leader made it into a positive experience that actually sounds like it served you well since then. But I guess we're getting ahead, huh?
Yeah. I was back in Utah after that summer, and I spent a lot of time. I was just working there full time and
in Provo,
yeah, and just doing those assignments, pondering, reading, thinking, and it's like I took my understanding, my whole testimony, and like wiped it clean and started like rebuilt it from step one, and that was wonderful for me. That was just what I spiritually needed then. And allowed me to not hold anger, bitterness with the church, not really have that cognitive dissonance that had been a part of the last year or two of my life, my whole life, really. And I was able to, I guess, patiently wait for answers and not feel like I need to know right now how this all works out. So
But your perspective changed a little bit where the church became less central to your testimony.
Correct.
And your relationship to God, your personal relationship to God became absolutely central.
Yes, definitely. And I decided I was going to go back to Taiwan for a year. And while I was back there, I would back into full fellowship with the church and be reinstated at BYU.
Thank you for joining us today on Gay Mormon Stories. To discuss this episode with others, please check us out at gaymormonstories.org. If you want to see this podcast continue, please consider making a monthly donation, again at gaymormonstories.org. All donations go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer Mormons. Music for this podcast was donated by George Parkinson and Kelly Clark Parkinson.
Blessed, pray, and did but was an angel's portion then. For while I fed with eager haste, the grass was not.